How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Bradley J. Berzer, author of Mythic Realms, The Moral Imagination in Literature and Film. Brad, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
This book is an anthology that collects more than three dozen of your essays from recent years. Why did you want to gather them together? What is your purpose?
Yeah, so it was kind of my deep dive into popular culture and really trying to examine everything from, say, John Ford's Stagecoach through Alfred Hitchcock, several of his movies, all the way up to the graphic novels of Alan Moore and Frank Miller. So I was really having fun with this. And these are just things that over really the last probably 5-6 years, I've just had a great time writing, most of them from the Imaginative Conservative, a website that I founded now 13 years ago. It'll be 13 years old in July. And I try to write more serious pieces as well while I'm writing for the Imaginative Conservative. But it's just hard for me just to write solid conservatism all the time. And so this was kind of my way of having fun and of looking at a variety of different things in popular culture.
The subtitle of Mythic Realms is The Moral Imagination in Literature and Film. What is the moral imagination?
The idea of the moral imagination really goes all the way back to Plato, but in the modern world, it's brought up most explicitly by Edmund Burke in his Reflections on the Revolution in France. And in that book, which was a series of speeches he gave to Parliament at the time, he argues that one of the things that the French revolutionaries were doing was that they were deconstructing the human person. And therefore, he says that coming out of the Judeo-Christian tradition, what we have to do is understand each soul basically as unique in the image of God, made in the image of God uniquely, but also clothed or robed in what he calls the wardrobe of the moral imagination. This is where, for example, C.S. Lewis gets the idea of the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe, right from Burke. And so Burke had this idea that when I look at you, John, I don't just see your human characteristics, but I actually see the essence of who and what you are, but clothed within certain parts of time and space. So that's what I was trying to get at with the book, that there were certain things. So, for example, Alfred Hitchcock's Rope, which I think is his greatest movie, and certainly one of my all-time favorite movies, but it delves so deeply into the very nature of the human person. And even Frank Miller, who's really best known for his comic book work on Batman, in his Batman stories, he really does try to get, again, to the kind of essence of what it means to be human.
This book ranges widely, and we're already getting a taste of that, but there are pieces on Willa Cather, C.S. Lewis, on the TV show Stranger Things, and more. Do you have a favorite piece in Mythic Realms?
Actually, kind of strangely, and this may sound pretentious, but my favorite piece is my final piece where I try and apply, and it's my conclusion to the book, where I try to apply the idea of the moral imagination specifically to faith and to matters of theology. And I'm fascinated, John, just absolutely fascinated by the fact that so many women dressed in white have appeared in mythology. So whether we're talking about the Lakota Indians, or we're talking about Socrates right before he's about to be executed, or we're talking about the Lady of the Lake in the King Arthur stories, or we're talking about the Virgin Mary, there's always this image of this beautiful woman appearing in white.
This closing piece is called O White Lady, Faith as a Struggle. Brad, what's the struggle?
Well, I guess my own cynicism and fighting that. And so I was raised Catholic. I left it for a little bit and then came back to the Catholic Church. But I find faith a struggle. I find that it's not something that just comes easily to me. I find that I have a natural skepticism about faith. And yet there's something, and I know I get this from my great aunt Loni, but there's just something in my own upbringing that keeps pulling me back to Mary as this great image and being the mother of God, being the mother of Jesus. She's just, to me, she's a fascinating figure, whether we take her mythically or whether we take her literally.
Faith in general and Catholicism in particular run through the essays of mythic realms. How does faith animate your moral imagination?
I think it does and it doesn't, in the sense that I want it to, and I desire to be a good, faithful Christian, but I also know that I'm rather weak in that area as well. Again, having too much natural skepticism about things, too many questions about the faith. And so that's what I'm trying to reconcile. But I think really what it comes down to for me, John, is that I'm always most fascinated in the idea of what is the human person. And Mary's strikes me in particular as the ideal human person. None of us are actually going to be exactly like Jesus, even though that we're supposed to try and attain that kind of perfection. We're not going to reach that. But there is always the possibility that we could imitate at least the sanctity of Mary.
This is a message from our friends at American Habits from the State Policy Network. We the people. Do you ever think about what that means and what happened to it? We the people certainly did not mean an imperial city full of unelected bureaucrats deciding everything from kindergarten curricula to nursing home funding formulas. We the people mean self-government, a free people deciding most things in their families and communities and delegating some authority to their towns and states while passing along just a small amount of that power to the national government. How did things get so upside down at American Habits? We tell stories of real people with real solutions, all working to restore federalism and self-government. If you're a public official, come get involved. If you're a citizen, come and see the new standard for American leadership. No matter who you are, come help us renew the forgotten but not lost habit of American self-government. Visit AmericanHabits.org to learn more. That's AmericanHabits.org.
One of the longer pieces in Mythic Realms is called The Dark Virtues of Robert E. Howard. So, Brad, first remind us, who was Robert E. Howard, and why did you want to write such a long piece about him?
That actually came out originally as a piece for Dan McCarthy at Modern Age. And I was on sabbatical when I wrote that piece, and I really spent some time on that and had a great time writing it. That would be the one piece that I think both fits within the book and doesn't fit at all. Because Robert E. Howard, who was the author of the Conan stories, really did have these incredible virtues, but they were very dark, and he ends his life in suicide. In fact, I begin that article by really talking about his suicide and then moving back from that suicide into his own fiction. So it's not quite coincidental that that piece is roughly in the middle of the book, and it's bookended by various things, but especially with that piece on Mary at the end. I wanted Robert E. Howard in there, but he doesn't quite fit in terms of the moral imagination, simply because of the own darkness in his life, which I'm sympathetic to. I respect him very much. I think he was a truly important figure in American literature, a pulp fiction writer. This is not a Hemingway. This is not a Steinbeck, but still very important, I think, in the kind of Edgar Allan Poe and then H.P. Lovecraft kind of mode. I think that the Conan stories really do tell something about America and about the American character.
The pieces in this book, by and large, really embrace pop culture. And here at Hillsdale College, you teach the classics. You teach the best that's been thought and said. But also from this book, we see your love of Conan the Barbarian, Batman, movies, TV shows. why pop culture? Why the focus on that?
Yeah, I'd say, and if I gave a kind of what I would attempt to be a highbrow answer, I would say that ultimately I'm just interested in culture. And I'm interested how culture shapes who and what we are and how we shape that culture. And one of the things that conservatives have lamented so much, especially since Alan Bloom, they've really lamented the loss of culture in society. And you know, if a conservative says Hollywood, that's almost always bad. There's very little good about that. But I would argue that if we look at Christopher Nolan, for example, and not just his Dark Knight trilogy, but we look at some of his other works, and I'm extremely excited about Oppenheimer coming out. I think this is going to be fantastic. I think someone like Chris Nolan is really using pop culture in a way that takes that pop and makes it something extraordinary. And I think Hitchcock did that. I think Willa Cather, even though she's one of our greatest American novelists, I think that quite often she was dealing with subjects that were just popular at the time, but she elevates it to a great degree. And I think other figures, even within comic books, like Alan Moore and Frank Miller, have done the same thing.
You mentioned one of your favorite pieces in this anthology is the last one on faith as a struggle, women in faith, and so forth. One of my favorites is one of the earlier ones. It's called On Loving Libraries. Oh, yeah. Brad, what do you love about libraries?
Libraries are repositories of Western civilization. And I've always loved libraries. They were always a sanctuary for me. They were always a place to go and to learn and to explore. So, you know, for me, as much, for example, as I love going out to Colorado and the Rockies, because I love exploring the Rockies themselves, I love exploring libraries. And that really started for me as a little kid, not only with the bookmobile that used to drive around our town in Hutchinson, Kansas, but also we had an extremely good public library there. I assume it's still great. I haven't been there in years, but it was excellent. And it was always nurturing and I think cultivating the best of what that community was.
You're the co-founder of the website, The Imaginative Conservative, and you mentioned it earlier, but tell us, what is the imaginative conservative and how can our listeners learn more about it?
Yeah, we have been publishing now for 13 years. So July of this year will be our 13th anniversary. It was actually, I was the co-founder, but the primary founder was Winston Elliott, who runs the Free Enterprise Institute in Houston, Texas. And we were having a conversation, Gleaves Whitney, Winston Elliott, and I, and a couple of other people, and we thought, wouldn't it be kind of neat if we just had this conversation out loud on the internet? And this was, blogs were already around, but they weren't as extensive as they are today. And we thought it would be pretty neat to have this kind of closed blog with about 20 friends. And we got so into the conversation with one another that we thought, why not make this public? And so here we are 13 years later. And it's been a very important website. It's been very important for my development. I've written over 700 articles in those 13 years for it. I've done a weekly column. For a while, I was doing a biweekly column for it. So it's been great just for my own writing and having that kind of practice. But I think also just the kind of audience that we've attracted has been a very intelligent audience. And so we get good dialogue going on the website.
The author is Bradley J. Berzer. The book is Mythic Realms, The Moral Imagination in Literature and Film. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot!
And he stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!